the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Women getting married. It's the season. It's happening all over the place. And you can just go to a wedding shower or a wedding just about any day of the week these days. It is the big season, and marriage is always a big issue. And that's one of the reasons why we talk about it so much. Because for us as Christians, marriage is not just a social convention. It is one of God's greatest gifts to us. One of the big questions raised by marriage in our day was prompted by a Newsweek cover story 20 years ago, 1986. In that cover story entitled Too Late for Prince Charming, Newsweek claimed that a study indicated that college-educated women who are still single at the age of 35 have only a 5% chance of ever getting married. Last week, Newsweek came out with a 20-year-late mea culpa. They say we were wrong. The cover story 20 years ago, Newsweek predicted a single 40-year woman had a better chance of being killed by a terrorist than getting married. Why we were wrong, the title of the cover story, Rethinking the Marriage Crunch. Now, what I found really interesting about this is not, frankly, the study that Newsweek did 20 years ago or the fact that they now think they got it wrong. That's rather incidental to my interest. My interest is in the testimony of the women who were covered in this cover story of last week. It's fascinating. For instance, many of the women in here who are now married are talking about how much satisfaction they are finding in being married. The first woman you meet in this cover story says this, I wish I'd married earlier and had more children, but I'm ecstatic. You also have on the next page of this, a woman who says, meeting my husband, having a traditional lifestyle now as a mom, I feel blessed. There is something deeply, deeply traditional about what these women have found as their satisfaction. And I think Newsweek missed the big story here. I think the big story is that these women found their great purpose in life, their greatest satisfaction and joy in the marriage that at one point in their life they didn't even think they were going to have, the experience of being a wife and a mother. We're going to talk today about why that is so. And I think we as Christians have a far deeper understanding of why this is so. We have a deeper stewardship and accountability to the question as well. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Go ahead and call in. We're going to get to your conversation about this in just a moment. We're also, in just a few minutes, going to have a very special guest to talk about why women need to be married. Now, the reason why we're doing this today is because at several points in recent months on this program, I've talked about why men need to be married. So we're going to turn the tables, take advantage of the Newsweek cover story, and deal with this question today. Again, call me at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Now, a review of some issues in the news. What do we do with the news about Haditha? I want to suggest that we do not know enough. We do know enough to be troubled. We know that there is at least just cause for a very serious investigation. What is being alleged here is that on November the 19th of the year 2005, United States military officers and soldiers massacred Iraqi civilians. Did it happen? I don't know. But this sounds a little bit like what we had in the opening discussion about the Abu Ghraib atrocity. We will find out what happened in Haditha. This is one of those reminders that the truth will come out, and on this issue, it looks like the United States has at least something to answer for. We need to find out what happened here, who's accountable, who did what. The big issue that Newsweek, by the way, is asking in its cover story in this week is this. For U.S. soldiers on the front lines in Iraq, where is the line between self-defense and shame? Question mark. Now, we're going to be taking this up in coming days, and I want to give you a framework for how to think about this. Because what we have been talking about at so many points in the past several years on this program is what we call just war theory. How do you declare a war to be just? And most of our attention in terms of the current debate has been given to when it's right to fight a war. When, in terms of a Christian worldview understanding, is it ever just to use lethal force in fighting a war? So just war theory comes with several requirements in order for a war to be considered just. It has to be defensive rather than offensive. It has to be declared by a lawful authority. It has to be fought within legitimate means. It has to discriminate between combatants and non-combatants. Several rules put in place there. But there is also a set of just war rules for how a war is justly to be fought. And one of the rules is you can't massacre citizens. You can't use excessive force. You can only use the lethal force required to successfully eliminate the threat. That has been a big struggle for warfare from the very beginning. Because when the human species gets to the process of killing, we as fallen creatures seem to have a very difficult time keeping that within its necessary limits in order to remove a threat. I don't know what happened in Haditha. I am not posing as if I do know what happened in Haditha. But we do know there's enough for America to require a serious investigation and one that would hold accountable all those who are involved in this atrocity, if indeed it is what it appears to be. It is fascinating to look at the news coverage of this event thus far, and there are some who are already jumping to conclusions. That's something I would encourage us all not to do. But even as we do not jump to conclusions, we do need to jump to responsibility, and that means there is a lot for us to answer here. Today in the United States Senate, of course, the debate continues on the federal marriage amendment known as the Marriage Protection Amendment. It is very important. Yesterday we heard comments made by President Bush in public statements in which he said this is a national question. It needs to be answered with a national solution. I just want to alert you to the kind of complication you're going to be hearing out there in the media, people saying this is a states' rights issue. Well, let's just remember that a lot of people who are saying that are the very people who will not allow the issue of abortion to be handled at the state level. And let's just remember and at every point remind others that there are federal judges ready to federalize this question, just as in 1973 the U.S. Supreme Court did that on the issue of abortion. So we cannot play games with this. This is not a hypothetical issue. This isn't the first time America has dealt with a contentious moral issue like this, knowing that there are federal judges who are ready to federalize the issue and just to settle it once and for all. Justice Antonin Scalia of the U.S. Supreme Court warned back in 2003 that we were headed towards the legalization of same-sex marriage by judicial fiat. In other words, in the Lawrence v. Texas decision of 2003, he warned we are right at the point at which it looks like the Supreme Court itself is at the brink of logic of mandating same-sex marriage in all 50 states. It comes down to this bottom line principle. Either we will define marriage for the judges, or the judges will define marriage for us. This is June the 6th, 2006, 666. A lot of people seem to be nervous about that. Let me put your minds at rest. Is the number 666 of significance? Well, of course it is, because of Revelation 13:18, which reads, "This calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. So let me encourage you to read your New Testament, especially the book of Revelation, and come to understand who the beast is and why that number is of great interest for all of us who believe that the Bible is the inerrant and infallible Word of God. But what does that have to do with June the 6th of the year 2006? Absolutely nothing. Nothing. Not at all. Nada. Why? Because our dating system is a human construction. The only way that this date would have significance in terms of eschatology is if God wills it to be so, and the only way he would have told us this is if there is a calendar in heaven that we are following, rather than a calendar that has been tweaked and adjusted and moved all over the place in terms of human calculation. There is no inherent meaning to the date June the 6th of the year 2006. There is no symbolism of this date. There are mothers who are demanding that their C-sections be delayed by hours so that they can give birth on the 7th rather than the 6th. There were mothers-to-be who yesterday were demanding that their pregnancies be induced, labor be induced, in order that they would be able to deliver a baby on June the 5th. Now, there are those trying to capitalize on the apparent symbolism of the day. As a matter of fact, the movie The Omen, the remake of the 1976 horror film, was timed to be released today in order to get maximum publicity. And so was the latest book by Tim LaHaye, also timed in order to have the maximum publicity. You also have the Satanist jumping on a bandwagon. The grandson of the late Anton LaVey, the priest of Satan, is to be married today on the date 666 in what is called a black wedding. the designer of the Victorian costume for the bride said that his thought process was dead Victorian bride. That's what I was going for, you know, straight out of the grave. This is the kind of nonsense up with which we must put on this day. But we as Christians have to be very careful that we don't act like amateur numerologists, nor fall prey to suspicion, superstition. What we need to do when we read the Bible is understand the text in its context, understand the reality in terms of eschatology of what we are being told in the book of Revelation, and then refuse to dabble in nonsense. If a baby's born today, welcome that sweet infant into the world. He or she is not born with any mark because of this date. We'll be right back to talk about marriage and why women are finding such satisfaction in being married and in being moms. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back, folks. It was back in 1986 that Newsweek came out with its cover story, Too Late for Prince Charming. It argued that college-educated women who were still single at the age of 35 had only a 5% chance of ever getting married. It was really one of those stories that came out with all these sound bites that people still remember, suggesting that a woman who was still single at the age of 40 was more likely to be killed by a terrorist than ever to marry. It was solid research, by the way, solid demographic statistical research based on census data and a survey. It just didn't turn out the way that Newsweek suggested it would. And it didn't turn out that way for very personal reasons. Newsweek, 20 years later, went back and found 14 of the women covered in this story. 11 of them are now married. None of them since then have divorced. Most of those who are married have children. Now, that obviously points out the fact that at least in terms of Newsweek's own coverage, the numbers didn't hold up. But the reason they didn't hold up is not so much because there was some demographic fluke. It was because these women evidently really did want to get married. Now Newsweek comes back 20 years later, cover story, rethinking the marriage crunch. And there's some fascinating things in here. If you want to know about the numbers, here are a few. Study at Princeton University suggests that female college graduates born between 1960 and 64 will marry at the rate of 97.4% eventually in their lives. That's big. 90% of baby boomers will eventually marry, both men and women. All kinds of numbers here indicating that most people are still going to get married. Interesting social trends have come in and have changed the landscape here. Newsweek identifies several of these trends as including, for instance, cohabitation, the emergence of single mothers by choice, the fact that many single women were very happy with their lives, and an increasingly out-of-the-closet gay population, et cetera, et cetera. But you even take all those factors that Newsweek tries to throw in, and people still want to get married. They are getting married later as a norm, and, they are perhaps coming with different expectations of marriage, but when they do get married, they're finding themselves amazingly happy. Let me just introduce you to the first woman covered in the Newsweek cover story of this year, and it was published just last week. Laurie Aronson was 29. She had little patience for people who inquired why she still wasn't married. Quote, I'm not a little spinster who sits home Friday night and cries, she'd say. As she passed 35, however, and one relationship after another failed to lead to the altar, she began to worry. Then she met a man. Their friendship blossomed into romance. At 39, she married him, becoming Laurie Aronson's star, the stepmom to his three kids. Then after 5 years of fertility treatment, she became pregnant with a son who will be 4 in July. Now listen to this. Quote, my parents are thrilled. It's a relief for everyone. I wish I could have found the right person earlier and had more children, but I'm ecstatic. Now, when I read that, I have to tell you, I saw an entire fortress of feminist ideology crumbling. Where are these women 20 years after the Newsweek cover story? The majority of them are married. Not one of those who did marry has divorced. Most of them have children, and they are happy. By the way, the photographs in the Newsweek cover story really tell you a lot. Mothers with children, I'm just looking here at Mrs. Starr with her little boy and her husband. Big grin on the boy's face, big grin on mom's face. The next page, another woman who also got married late, Andrea Quattrocci. She married Richard Murray, shifted from a jet-set career to full-time motherhood. This is what she says. By the way, 20 years ago she said, I want someone who likes all the things I like if they hate sailing, that's really a deterrent. That sounds like that was then and this is now comment, right? Because here's the now. quote, meeting my husband and having a traditional lifestyle now as a mom, I feel blessed. Why do women need to get married? Now, I will ask that question very boldly because I'm asking that question long after I've been talking about why men need to get married. And I'll just rehearse this real quickly. Men need to get married because marriage is the great civilizing instrument in the lives of men. Marriage is the great instrument by which men are made more serious, more responsible, more fulfilled. That's where men find sexual satisfaction. That is where God intended for the sexual gift to be exercised, only within the gift of covenant marriage. And thus, men who are married report that they have the happiest sex lives. They find the greatest fulfillment in their lives. They find grace. They find joy, fulfillment, satisfaction in being husband and father. Men need that. But women also need marriage. And I'm saying this as a generalization. I know that there are some persons who are given the gift of celibacy, and there are some persons who are single by different circumstances. But in the main, let's just face it, it goes right back to Genesis 2, where most men and most women need to be married, and the Newsweek article just affirms that in the most incredible way. With me on the line today is Jay Martin, who is Director of Women's Programs for Southern Seminary and is also Women's Evangelism Strategist for the North American Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention. She is married, lives in Houston with her attorney husband, Dana, and they have one daughter, Kelly, a 19-year-old sophomore at Texas A&M University. Jay, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Jay, when you read this Newsweek article, you know, did you think anything like what I was thinking? Did you find it surprising and rather, well, even exhilarating to see all these women saying that they're so satisfied being married?
Yeah, I'm with you. I just thought it was ridiculous that people didn't realize that to begin with. I think just about anybody I've ever known, working or not, women want to get married. They want that protection and provision that comes from a man. And it's not that you can't go out and work and enjoy work and being a part of things. I mean, I'm certainly working, but I'm working from my home in Houston, and that has a lot of great benefits to it.
Well, Jay, so, when you think about the Newsweek article, for instance, and, you know, feminism has really evolved somewhat since, we'll say, 1986. But in 1986, most of these women seemed to feel a social pressure to say that they didn't really feel a great urgency to get married. Has something happened? I mean, it seems to me that the whole feminist worldview just kind of crumbled on this, because these women, talking 20 years later, seem to be unembarrassed to say, hey, I'm married, I'm in a traditional marriage, I'm a married mom, and I'm loving it. What happened?
Well, you know, simply put, I think they got out there, tried some things, and realized they weren't truth. They weren't facts. The world told them that if you didn't have a, you know, strong kind of a job and weren't out there trying to dress like a man and act like a man, that you were, that you weren't significant. And so they got out there and they tried to be everything and tried to be something that God didn't make them to be. And I'm not saying women can't be, you know, strong and all those kinds of things, but certainly, you know, God made women to be women, frankly, and not to try to be something they're not. And so it gave them a lot of stress in their lives to try to act like something where they weren't, you know, that wasn't their natural way. And, you know, the world just told them a lie, and they bought it, and they've come back to say, hey, what were we thinking?
Well, Jay, let me ask you, why do I talked in the earlier in the program about why men need to be married. Why do women, as a generalization, need to be married?
I think for the most part, they want the protection and the provision that comes from a man. I think we need to be needed. I think that women need to mother. They have that nurturing instinct that wants to take care of the home and take care of things. These are all things that the Lord has put in women's hearts and minds. And so that's what fulfills them. You know, seeing that child be, you know, brought up and wanting to have kids. And I do feel sorry for those that aren't able to have them, but there is usually that drive in them to, you know, to want to find a man to, you know, be whisked off their feet and taken care of, and that she can be there to help him and meet his needs, and that's exciting for women. That's how they're going to find fulfillment.
Now, the feminist infrastructure and ideology said that everything Jay Martin just told us is because women bought into a socially constructed truth that was actually oppressing them. 20 years later, these women seem to be saying, it's marriage and motherhood and being a wife that liberated me. It's not what's oppressing me. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. Let's talk about it.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back. We're talking about the Newsweek cover story last week, Rethinking the Marriage Crunch. The Marriage Crunch was their headline 20 years ago. Very, very famous, and in fact, recently is referred to as an iconic cover story, which means it simply becomes kind of a social symbol. And it was a big story 20 years ago. I well remember when it came out, people talking about the fact that a woman who was still single at 35 had only a 5% chance of ever being married. A woman single at age 40 was more likely to be killed by a terrorist than to get married. Warnings that late marriage and all the rest of these things were leading to women who would never marry. Turns out a lot of that just wasn't true, but that's not even my concern. Not really. My concern is with this cover story that came out last week, because I think it's a blockbuster for reasons that I don't even think Newsweek is concerned about. I think the photographs are blockbusters. Of the women interviewed several years ago, Newsweek located 11 of the 14 single women, 11 of them, and 8 are now married. That's 8 out of 11, folks. That's just under 80%. Several have children or stepchildren. None are divorced. It's fantastic. And you start looking at the pictures. The pictures just warm my heart. Pictures of mothers and wives. Not all have children, but most of them do. And boy, Newsweek really knows how to put some big, nice, wonderful, warm-hearted photographs out in their magazine of these women with their kids and the women with their husbands. And the statements of satisfaction are so clear. This one woman who said, "I wish I'd married earlier and had more children, but I'm ecstatic. I wish I'd married earlier." That's a very interesting statement. That's a counterintuitive statement in terms of what a lot of people think in terms of today's society. I want you to join the conversation, and I want us to focus on this question. Why do women need to be married? Jay Martin joined us in the last segment to say that women need to be married because there's an inner drive towards that kind of union, towards motherhood and being a wife, and women wanting the protection and provision. Those are the two words that Jay used that they hope to find in marriage, in a husband. But I want to know, you know, what is Newsweek missing here? Why is it that women want to be married? And there are some who would simply say, the feminist argument would be that women want to be married because they've been trapped into an oppressive way of thinking that suggests they'll only find significance in a husband or in a motherhood, and they're suggesting that's wrong. Well, these women don't seem to be buying into that logic. Are you? That's the question. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, this is one of those pointers in a society, a pointer in a culture towards some kind of sanity. Every once in a while, some kind of light just kind of breaks through. It's like a shaft coming through a cloudy day when all of a sudden there's something that just brings clarity. And to me, it's the photographs in this article. I mean, to me, that just says everything. It says something more important than even the words in the article. Because these women are finding such deep satisfaction in being married and in being moms. Some of you out there have found that satisfaction. Some of you out there have been surprised to find that satisfaction. I love talking about it from the male side because I think that's where the world really has very little conversation. Why do men need to be married? And we've tried to talk from a Christian biblical perspective about why men need to be married. Why do women need to be married? That's the other side of the equation. And I do think there is a big story to be told there. I think the story is bigger than Newsweek recognized. I think the story is bigger than the national media is likely to detect. By the way, I think it's also interesting that these women, not one of them has divorced. Not one in the 20 years. Now, that itself is a very interesting statistic. But maybe, just maybe, these women had at least some time to reflect upon just why marriage is so valuable. And just what was missing in their lives before they were married. I think that's one of the issues in the scandal of easy divorce today, and the scandal of so many marriages ending in divorce, where a lot of people just aren't facing the fact that being unmarried, by the way, which they see as the escape from what they see as the problem of their marriage, that being single brings, in many cases, far more problems than it removes. Let's go to Tamara calling from Knoxville, Tennessee, listening on XM. Go ahead, Tamara.
I just wanted to comment on the marriage situation. I did not marry until I was 40, and I had a very successful career and no need to be cared for or taken care of. But I think we just have a God-given, natural, innate desire to nurture and be nurturers. And not getting married until my 40s, we did not have children. But you still are able to fulfill that desire and that ability to nurture your husband and nurture your home and nurture your family, even though your family is just you and your husband.
Tamara, let me just speak for husbands all over the world. We need that. God bless you for giving that and for finding your calling in that. And that's a sweet, sweet word. And one, I think, again, is just counterintuitive, just a desire to nurture. Tamara didn't say it was something forced on her by the culture. It's something she knew within herself. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. I'm Albert Mohler. You know, it's not every day that one of the nation's big three news magazines comes out and says, we blew it 20 years ago, let's update the story. And Newsweek did say they didn't think they blew it entirely, but they did say that the horror statistics that they had trumpeted about women in marriage simply didn't hold water and didn't come true. And what really fascinates me is the personal angle on this, is they went and interviewed 11 of the 14 single women in their 1986 story. And they found the majority of them, well, very happy, very married, and very much moms as well. Let's go to Annie calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Annie, welcome.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Glad to have you. Go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. My question related to a comment that you made the other day. I absolutely agree with you and with your callers today that it's intrinsic to a woman's nature to want to be married. However, I heard a caller on your program the other day asked the man should remarry after he had divorced. And you said, I'm going to say up front, no, but we'll have to do a show on that some other time. And I want to know how you deal with the contradiction. There are a lot of people out there who are not married that would love to be married, learn lessons from when they are younger, would love to be remarried. But a lot of the Christian men do not remarry. They date. They live with women. They think that sex is their right and privilege, but they don't remarry. It's almost like there's a taboo against remarriage. And I would like to have you address that in terms of how we can address that as a Christian community.
Yeah.
Actually work to promote marriage. We worry so much about the divorce statistics, but we actually fail to promote marriage.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Annie, honestly, I don't think we worry enough about the divorce statistics. I think what we create is, by the way, just think about the fact, implicit in your question, that every one of those men who divorced left another woman who's now without a husband. I mean, that does not factor into the math. In other words, divorce does not create a different ratio of single women or unmarried women to unmarried men. It just means you're shifting who's unmarried and who's married in many cases. The issue of divorce and remarriage is a big biblical issue. If we're Christians, we have to take the Bible seriously. There is a disagreement among Christians, even among some evangelicals, as to whether someone who was once divorced can remarry. As a matter of fact, just today I picked up another book, dealing with this issue and this controversy. There's no way to settle that question here, but I do want to come back and say that if you're talking about men who, instead of getting married, are cohabitating and having sex and all the rest, they are just heaping coals of judgment upon themselves. I mean, every one of those things, step one, two, and three, is a direct act of rebellion against the Word of God. I mean, it's not as if, that a Christian man can avoid that responsibility by cohabitating. That's just insane. And so this is a situation in which a return to a clear, biblical, Christian worldview is the only way out of the confusion. We can't negotiate one issue over against another. We've got to take the whole big package. And that whole big package means honoring marriage. It means honoring the marriage covenant, making so long I will, until death we shall part. We've got to hold on to the whole thing and to the fact that sex is intended only for marriage. That's it, period. So, the biblical perspective is really pretty clear. Keep yourself pure until marriage. get married seriously, stay married seriously, stay monogamous and faithful in marriage, receive all the gifts that God will give you in marriage, and there's nothing broken with that picture. The minute you start to break one part, boy, just as Annie demonstrates here, you can start just a long series of compromises and problems that just add to each other. All right, let's go to Pam calling from Kingsport, Tennessee. She's listening on WHCB. Go ahead, Pam.
Hello, how are you doing? In the 20s, when I was in my 20s, I graduated in 1975. I would have been right there with that article. Yeah, you know, independent, the Anjali woman kind of thing. And now that time has passed by and I have become a mom, and, you know, was married and become a mom, that overwhelming, you know, that nurturing the wife thing really took over. And the problem was, is, you know, when I grew up with that idea of the career and all that stuff, I ended up marrying a guy who kind of, that was his thought too. Then as I began to change and wanted to stay home, that didn't set. And you know, that is one thing I would like to caution women, or not caution, but just say, when you're thinking about getting married, talk about those things. Talk about the future. Talk about if you really think you want to be a stay-at-home mom, get that out there on the table and talk about it. Because I'm now a single mom. I'm back at work because we have bills, but I really tried to balance that part-time thing. And I have a better understanding. One of your callers earlier mentioned learning from your past mistakes. Well, if your past mistakes are any measure of how much you learn, I should be just so greatly intelligent now. because I've made those mistakes. But
well, Pam, I really appreciate your willingness to share that openly as well. And I appreciate the honesty of your statement about marriage and your expectation. And, you know, all I can say is that there is no shortage of men who are going to fail to understand these expectations because they have their own wrong expectations of marriage. And that, again, is why the local church has got to be the place where these things are clearly taught from Scripture. That's where we have to confront men and women, for that matter, boys and girls, young men and young women, with the biblical picture, and we've got to hold ourselves as Christians accountable to that within the context of the local church. Anything short of that just leads to disaster. Let's go to Wayne calling from Tukwaka, British Columbia, listening on XM170. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, hi, this is Wayne here. I love your program. Just wanted to make a comment that my wife and I, we got married when she was 32, successful career and stuff. And the thing I find interesting is how Christian women, other Christian women who haven't worked and had careers, they always think they're missing out on something. And they're always wondering, you know, should I be doing this or should I be doing that?
Oh, Wayne, we lost you. And we don't get many callers from British Columbia. And you were in the business of making a point there. Well, sometimes the technology fails. But nonetheless, he was saying that his wife didn't miss out. She got married. And, you know, that is one of the big questions. In other words, where are you right now? There are young women, older women, even teenage girls listening to this program. Just how important is marriage to you? You know my point is going to be emphatically that marriage ought to be very important to you. Unless you know that God's given you the gift of celibacy, which is for His glory and for a gospel purpose, then seize that calling God has given you and pray that God will send just the right man into your life, and then seize marriage for all it's worth and live out in faithfulness all that God would give you in marriage, in being a wife, and in being a mom. I think you'll find in the mirror the same kind of smiles you see in this edition of Newsweek magazine. I'll be right back. About 1,000 persons attended an official D-Day ceremony today in Normandy at Anesnel-sur-Mer, part of Gold Beach, where British soldiers came ashore. The site of the official anniversary alternates each year between U.S. and British landing zones. It is a good time for us to remember this is the 62nd anniversary of the D-Day invasion, the greatest turning point in the history of World War II in the European theater. The numbers are staggering. It was the largest amphibious assault ever launched. It involved 5 Army divisions in the initial assault, over 7,000 ships. Just imagine that, that very narrow British Channel filled with 7,000 ships. In addition, there were 11,000 aircraft, a total of 75,215 British and Canadian troops, and 57,500 U.S. troops were landed there by sea on D-Day. Another 23,400 were landed by air. It was one of the greatest logistical challenges ever faced by an army. It was a remarkable day of history for America, for Europe, for Germany, of course, and for the veterans who were there. And the reason I'm mentioning it today, I mean, after all, it is the 62nd anniversary, and every year we'll bring another anniversary, next year the 63rd, and after that the 64th. What makes this so special is that every one of these anniversaries is welcomed by fewer and fewer of those who were there. And it's important for us to remember that the very fact that we are having this conversation today on the airwaves, the very fact that the United States of America is now the dominant nation on the world scene, the very fact that we still have the freedoms that these soldiers, sailors, and airmen went to fight for is because they were willing to land on these beaches. They were willing to go against the Wehrmacht, to go against the Luftwaffe and the full force of the Third Reich. They were willing to go with their comrades, knowing that as they looked to the left and to the right on those specially designed landing ships, they knew it was very likely that all of them would make it safe up on those beaches and up those cliffs and onto the European mainland. We are told that about 7,000 veterans of World War II die every week. They've been described as the GI generation, the greatest generation. This much is clear. They answered the call for duty, and America looks back to World War II as a golden era in this sense. It was a time when America got to fight a foe that was unquestionably evil. It was a time when a generation literally summoned all of its resources and all of its commitments and put itself on the line. I salute those who were there on that day and survived, and we salute the memory of those who were there on that day and did not. If you know a World War II veteran, remember today to tell them thank you and ask them to tell you the story of what they learned in the crucible of that incredible experience. We'll be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. Get ready to ask your question. I'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.